Lowe's knows that your business is built on speed and trust. That's why the Lowe's Pro Desk is here to get you what you need the moment you need it. We'll help you plan your project, calculate your materials, and pivot when your job takes an unexpected turn. And with our pro-only checkout and dedicated pro parking, you have what you need to tackle your job and be back on the job in no time. Just visit us at the Pro Desk. Lowe's knows pros. We help. You save.
Which Manning brother will win the FanDuel Kick of Destiny 3 on Super Bowl Sunday? Peyton or Eli? Make your free pick now to compete for a share of $10 million in bonus bets. May the best Manning win. Only on FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Vermont. No purchase necessary. $10 million prize pool to be split equally among all eligible participants who made the correct pick. Prize issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
You're welcome back to The Hard Shoulder. Kieran Cuddihy with you until 7 o'clock, and it's time for this.
Winners and sinners on The Hard Shoulder.
Yes, Ger Gilroy is with me from Off The Ball. Elaine Burke, host of the For Tech's Sake podcast, picking their winners and sinners from the week gone by. Elaine, we might pick up with your sinner of the week.
My sinner is Sam Altman's other company that's not OpenAI, that no one really talks about as much.
And yes.
It sounds like something out of sci-fi villainy.
So tell us what he's been up to or trying to do. It's kind of mental.
There's this company called Tools for Humanity, which has a service that was originally called WorldCoin and is now called World Network. And I am not lying when I say any of this stuff. What they're actually doing is they are sending these orbs out to various countries to scan the irises of people in exchange for cryptocurrency. That is what they are doing. Does that sound insanely dystopian to anyone else here?
That sounds like a totally normal thing that Lex Luthor would do.
Like WorldCoin in crypto, which is one of the most useless cryptos I could imagine. And like, none of them are terribly useful, but like WorldCoin isn't even really, it's not validated on a lot of markets. It's patently useless.
And do we know what he wants to do with the scans of all these
we can trust
eyes?
Them, right?
They're trying to turn it into like a biometric identity database. So biometrics just means that your identification is through something that's kind of bodily related to you. So if you use fingerprint scanning for your phone, that's biometrics. So it doesn't have to be very fancy in advance. So the iris scanning is the biometric identification. And what they've so far done is like integrated this into a few platforms so that like if you wanted to log into Reddit, if a certain subreddit moderator has enabled it to do so, you can log in via WorldCoin and you've identified yourself as an official human. Then I think they've done this, and I'm probably selling this on the prospect of like in the future we won't be able to tell who's human or not because AI is going to be so big. So he's probably trading off the reputation of his other company in doing this. But it's really sketchy.
Sorry, it's totally sketchy. And it's like, I'm not to be utterly dystopian about it, but I mean, some autocrat is absolutely going to want to get their hands in that database with regard to their own population, aren't they?
And
a biometric
they,
database of everybody in their country.
Yeah.
This is what they're in trouble over, the consent to the data sharing. So, like, I mean, you shouldn't be able to pay people off to collect their data in this kind of way. Like, that's really, really dodgy. It kind of goes against the ideas of consent and pure and informed consent if you're paying people. Now, even though they're paying them with monopoly money, they are still trying to give a reward for this, and they're mostly happening in like it's rife across South America. Most of the countries that they're operating in are there, and it's, you know, countries that have a lot of disadvantaged communities who would try to get a reward like this for what seems like, you know, I just walk up to this weird orb and I get my eye scanned and I get some fake money. Okay, but they also don't allow people to revoke their consent. So you can't like ask for to be deleted from the system, apparently. So this is another reason why they're getting into trouble. So in Brazil, where they've been operating, they've actually been banned because Brazil has adopted similar enough rules to our GDPR here in Europe.
I was about to bring up GDPR.
They're supposed to have informed consent. Yeah. And like this goes against all of those notions. And the thing is, the Brussels effect with GDPR was very real. A lot of countries, a lot of nations adopted similar looking rules and they're running up against it and getting into quite a bit of trouble for this service. It's wild, though.
It is
it
wild.
It exists at all.
It is wild. Ger, who's your sinner of the week?
My sinner of the week is the government, really, and the general lack of PE that we do. So we had Mike Quirk on the show on Thursday morning and we put a clip out of him just talking about the lack of PE in schools generally, specifically secondary schools where they're doing an hour a week. Sorry, primary schools where they're doing an hour a week, and then secondary schools where they do two classes. And it went wild. It just went wild on TikTok in particular. There were loads of teenagers giving out about the fact. And Micheál Martin was in studio with us when he was last Taoiseach, so however long ago that was, 3 years. Oh, we're definitely going to fix this. And then it just, it obviously falls off the agenda. But you feel like if we were to get the population to be slightly more active, all the metrics are, you know, vast improvement in health outcomes, and it would be quite cheap to do. I know we have a recruitment issue when it comes to finding teachers, but if you were to ring fence some of the health budget, inject into school age population, lifetime habits of just being active. Now, I think PE probably to most people of certain generation is like standing in a coal field, it lashing and everybody getting wet and coming in and they're being, but like there should be indoor facilities, there should be dance, there should be movement, there should be yoga. You know, there's there is a move towards wellness, which apparently you can fulfill the criteria of the wellness by putting on a video about wellness. And I'm like, that's not quite the whole point of this. But I just feel like there's a big opportunity for us to do a little bit of social engineering where you give people the tools to be active in whatever it is that they like. You know, you don't have to do GAA, you don't have to do rugby, you don't have to do running, although everybody should do a bit of running. I feel like, you know, this is just not a topic of conversation. It is now officially a Leaving Cert module that you can do.
Yeah.
But it just is like, oh, okay, we've ticked that box, let's move on. The new Minister for Sport is from the Agriculture Department, right? So you expect that that means that greyhound racing and the 20 million a year is going to continue to be protected, even though it just shouldn't be. It doesn't justify the 20 million investment. The numbers going are dwindling. The whole, oh, it's a great social night out thing. Everybody's starting to go, well, what happened to the dogs afterwards? You know, our track record is bad.
Yeah.
And it continues to be bad, and our reputation globally is bad. They've banned it in New Zealand. There's like one dog track left in London. It's an industry that we shouldn't be propping up. And we could take that money and we could give it to, you know, sport in school or physical activity in school.
Yeah.
And change lives.
But do we overcomplicate it as well? Like, if you get a government minister in, you know, I mean, and let's say you kind of convince someone to kind of take this on, what they'll do is they'll kind of establish what they'll probably try and do is establish a citizens' assembly to talk about it, you know, or some sort of committee, and there'll be kind of white papers, and then there'll be talk of kind of staffing resources, and like you have those GDO, those games development officers in the gate, you'd have them kind of being shared between schools. And I wonder, like, do you not just move to it? Like, is the lower hanging fruit just not kind of when you go to some countries in Asia and people are just kind of in the park in the morning doing kind of, you know, movement and dexterity exercises?
Outdoor facilities would be nice for a start to enable things like that. Because this actually goes down to like even the youngest level. I remember a study a few years ago, I think it was out of DCU, because I know their sports science program is really good. And they were finding that early age education in children, so I think it was like junior infants, senior infants age, they are reducing in their capabilities and fine motor skills. And it's literally because like they don't do a lot of play. And I don't even just mean sport, like I mean play. And even the idea of risky play has become kind of a thing that has to be talked about. When that was just a thing that we organically did in our age, like having risky play, climbing on things and, you know, running around, being rambunctious. That's kind of been seeded out of early years education in many ways, and early years social interactions. As a combination of things becoming a bit more digitized and kids maybe being a bit more sedentary because of that, but also like parents maybe being a little bit more protective of their kids and stuff like that.
Parents being more litigious as well. All it takes is a parent in the school deciding I'm going to sue over that ball.
And now you see like these centers opening up and they're all about risky play, and then that's like their whole USP. And I'm like, that just sounded like life growing up when I was a kid. It's wild.
It really is. And I think if you look at the success of the ECCE, right, you're going to see better educational outcomes because people are entering into the organised childcare earlier in life. And that's going to have a big impact down the road. But we already have that model where if you get in early and you invest in stuff, you're going to see stuff benefits out the other side. And I think the low-hanging fruit, like for me, the easiest thing to do would be to any teacher who volunteers for sport counts against your Croke Park hours. Like it's just an immediate kind of, okay, well then
yeah,
you have loads more sports being played in schools, other sports outside of the mainstream sports. And but sure, look, that no one wants to hear those ideas.
Anyway, meanwhile, in Clara National School, they hurl at every lunchtime. Big leg and little break.
Well, there
long may it continue. Anyway, listen, we'll take a quick break. We will get the news headlines. We haven't replaced Eamon yet with AI, as far as I know. Mr. Gilroy and Elaine Burke are both still with me. Sure, who's your first winner of the week? Your only winner of the week, I should say. You're only allowed one.
Are we?
You don't have more than one.
No, I've only got one. I've only got one. New documentary out today in cinemas called Blue Road. It's the story of Edna O'Brien. A brilliant documentary maker, Sinead O'Shea, made it. She made Pray for Us Sinners was the last one about the mother and baby homes in Navan and the quiet resolve of a doctor there to try and save some of the mothers and the babies from the fate of being taken into the home. So this is a story of Edna O'Brien, who obviously famously in the 1960s wrote books which scandalised Irish Catholic hierarchy in particular. Her books were burned. I did an English degree in the 90s and there was no Edna O'Brien on our 4 years. Maybe you could have if you had like sought it out and got kind of...
But it wasn't put before you. It wasn't presented to you.
She was totally suppressed in the Irish... Like, this is like one of our best-selling, most successful authors.
Yeah, I have to confess, I actually know very... I tell you, if you... Before you go any further, she's from County Clare and she wrote The Country Girls.
Yeah.
And it was banned. And kind of after that, I have the vague narrative of, you know, kind of lauded abroad, ignored at home, but I don't know. I actually know nothing about her.
I saw the film and that's all I knew going in.
Yeah.
And I'm obsessed with her now. She is a fascinating and formidable character. And actually, Sinead O'Shea, I think, had a similar experience to you, Jer, because I went to a preview screening and she did a Q&A afterwards and she mentioned she studied English. And
I should say we were in the same class.
Ah,
oh,
she
wow.
said that she hadn't learned about Edna O'Brien and was confused about that. And she also
did she mention Jer?
No.
It didn't come up. But she did say she kind of felt like there was an attitude, if you did bring her up, that she was kind of written off as kind of fluffy, like writing that wasn't
somebody
really
else wrote her books.
Attention.
Somebody else wrote her books was the was
well
was
her
the
husband
lie.
Tried.
Oh,
to
really?
The
like Mary Shelley's well. Frankenstein.
Yeah. And so, but that was said to her by one of our classmates, like, oh, what are you doing this for? She didn't even write her own books. But so there's a character of, there's a slew of characters in Irish literary life who took her husband's side. He had been a famous author, had sold a book to the States that ended up becoming the Mayflower of the movie, sold 5 million copies. So he was the one who was the power. All the while she was trying to write and eventually ends up becoming by far the bigger success.
Yeah.
And he had mates and a nephew who were prominent in the media constantly accusing her of sleeping her way to success and not writing her own stuff. And just that casual misogyny that was tolerated in print all the way up to the 1990s, you know. Now, she ended up interviewing Gerry Adams for the New York Times, which again and would have been like, well, this was before he got his visa to travel over there around the same time. You know, you weren't really allowed to talk to Gerry Adams. Like, we grew up at a time when we didn't know what his voice sounded like because it was dubbed by actors. And you think about like just how wild our access to the truth was. The documentary is unbelievable and it's got a limited release. So if you're thinking of going to see it, go and see it quick.
What was it about her books that scandalized? Was it the
sex.
What? Okay, that's sex. She just dealt with sex.
Women enjoying sex.
Oh, what I was going to say, yeah, was it? It wasn't like when we say sex, it was an acknowledgement that it was a kind of a thing people pursue for pleasure, as opposed to like it wasn't.
But there's some
it wasn't
details.
Like a Magdalene Laundrie type thing. It wasn't like she was exposing kind of the.
No, it was. It's like it. Have you read it?
No, but there's excerpts in the film and like none of it is particular. Like in a 2025 context, like it's pretty tame. And it wouldn't even come up to the levels of like your Gilly Coopers or anything like that. It wasn't like that they were just big sex-based novels, but there was sex scenes in it and it was young women discovering sex and enjoyment of it.
So I guess what I was getting at is like the point they were banned not because they were trying to kind of cover up some truth that she was seeking to shine a light on. They were banned for kind of morality and purity reasons, was it? This is kind of corrupt the nation.
Well, so exactly, but she is uncovering a truth there that like women have, and may even be human beings too, which let's face it, was not allowed in the 1960s in Ireland. But her life is unbelievable. So she leaves Ireland, ends up taking the kids with her. There's like unbelievable stuff about the diaries where her husband finds the diaries and then writes into them, like commentating on them. He was quite a
nasty stuff.
Like, quite a funny person as well. There's some belly laughs when he's describing what her family are like. He calls them slit-eyed peasants at one point, which, you know, he did have a turn of phrase, in fairness to him. But there's a horrific thing where he writes to the kids. After he asks the kids, where are you going to go? Are you going to go with your mother who will pollute you? Or are you going to stay with me and have like the life that you should have? And the kids are like, oh, maybe we'll stay with our mum. And so he writes to them and signs it your ex-father. And it's just this horrific stuff.
And they're young. I think they were 7 or 8 or something like that. Yeah. One was at this time. Like, yeah. Like kids. Like he's saying this stuff to, he was a little bit demented.
And she sells a screenplay and gets 50 grand and buys an absolute mansion in Chelsea. And then has this life where the kids are getting woken up and one of the Beatles is at the end.
It's Paul McCartney, yeah.
At the end of the bed playing. Marlon Brando's in her kitchen. Things don't go as well as maybe Edna would have liked that night. Great documentary. Go and watch it in the cinema if you can.
It's in cinemas. Yeah. General release. All right. Blue Road is the name of it. Elaine, who's your winner of the week?
Liang Wengfeng.
Who's Liang Wengfeng?
Well, I tried to think of a different name other than Deep Seek.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm sure you have talked about
Deep Seek a little bit.
This is the startup out of China that has kind of upended the notions of what it takes to build powerful AI models. Liang Wengfeng is the leader of that startup. And I think it is interesting because something that's obviously the big part of the story is what they released in their research and what they claim to have achieved with their model. But the fact that it came from this startup as well, I think, is fascinating. And Liang Wengfeng, as the lead of it, he comes from a background in quantitative hedge funds. So this isn't like China's Baidu, which is like their massive big tech company. This isn't Alibaba, their other big tech company. It's not ByteDance, their other big tech company. Hmm. Like, this is a nobody in the space suddenly taking over. And anybody who was watching development of models for a while would have seen DeepSeek was doing interesting stuff and it was kind of holding its own against those bigger names. But this really kind of...
What happened this week then, if it had been around for a while? As you say, you're aware of its existence and you're like, oh, that's interesting what they're doing. But the likes of me, it suddenly kind of explodes onto the scene over 10 days. How did that happen?
So what happened was they had released some research and it started to get picked up in the press, people weren't noticing that what they were reporting was that they had achieved the equivalent of the really expensive models out of the likes of OpenAI. So not the free ChatGPT that other people might have played around with. These are like called reasoning models. They're more intensive. OpenAI is one of them you could pay $200 a month to access. So not cheap at all. They had released something that was equivalent to that according to their stats and according to other people's testing as well. For much cheaper, like a 30th of the price to access it, and also like a free chat version of it as well. And they claim that it only took them like $6 million to train and build it as well. And this is in the context of Trump announcing $500 billion investments in AI infrastructure and all the billions that have been invested in AI up until this point. And all those billions were invested thinking that they had supremacy, these companies. So NVIDIA in particular, which is the one that makes the chips.
Oh, yeah.
In China, they technically can't access the best chips because they're not allowed to sell them out of the US into China. So they apparently did it with lesser versions of these really expensive chips that NVIDIA was selling. So the value of that company gets called into question if the really high priced chips that they're selling and that people are banking on them continuing selling aren't actually needed for the future of AI. But now this is going on. So now OpenAI is claiming that they stole their data. That's ironic coming from a company that technically stole everyone else's data to build their model, apparently. And then DeepSeek is also maybe being accused, of maybe getting access to those better chips via Singapore. Like they shouldn't have been able to buy them through the US, but maybe they found a workaround. Yeah. All this is just claims against them so far. None of this has been proven, but people are trying to poke holes in the argument. They're also saying maybe it didn't cost $6 million, maybe it cost $500 million. Big difference in those figures, but it's still very different to the billions that are being invested and projected to be invested into AI infrastructure. So it's just really upended a lot of what big tech people have been selling about the idea of AI, that they need to bring nuclear centers back online to power these. Like, 'cause nuclear stocks also tanked in relation to this, because people were thinking we were going to need an energy revolution to try and power this AI future. And the fact that they may not need a $500 billion infrastructure investment. Meta has been talking about building a data center that would cover a significant part of Manhattan. Maybe they don't need to be doing that. Maybe they don't need to be given license to do that. So it really just challenges a lot of what's been coming out in terms of AI.
Does it, to a degree as well, I mean, does it provide kind of a degree of inspiration for people in Europe? Because, you know, this is the kind of the accusation you hear make. We had Mark Little on the show a couple of weeks ago, and it was actually about the inauguration, but one of his takeaways was, like, all the people around Trump, like, all those companies, they're US companies, almost all of them, you know what I mean? Why is there, and their rivals are Chinese companies? He's like, why are none of their rivals European companies? Yep. And I guess maybe the DeepSeek, if it's true, and I like this, all those caveats you mentioned, and maybe that kind of provides a bit of kind of solace to those in Europe who say, actually, maybe we don't need all of that to
be a rival. And also it shows that you actually can innovate in a restrictive environment. In fact, you get better innovation in a restrictive environment, because if they managed to do this because they were limited in terms of the money that they could access, and because they're also not one of the big billionaire spenders in China themselves. Yeah. So they were limited in money, and they were like, what we're told is that they were limited in processing power that they could access, and the amount of chips.
Limited information too. Tiananmen Square is this beautiful tourist attraction.
Oh, that is true. If you do ask it things about Tiananmen Square, about Taiwan, and because it's a reasoning model, you can sometimes see it start to reason it out.
It did it. So I asked about human rights abuses that the US have been, or war crimes they've been accused of. So you got My Lai and everything kind of onwards. And then I asked about China, and because people have been talking about it, I said, "What? That was obviously an online thing. It's total nonsense." It started to give me the answers. Yeah. The Uyghurs were the first thing that came up, and then halfway through, boom, disappears.
Yeah.
Actually, I can't really talk about this or whatever,
and
it says.
That's them operating within the confines of the CCP censorship.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting as well, because like what you're seeing there is a reasoning model at work. So that's those models have to actually kind of break down a query into component parts and challenge itself on its own query. So it's actually one question that I ask most free chatbots out there, just kind of give an idea of how good or bad they are at something. And it's really fun to test this one, is give me a word that is a animal and also backwards is a plant. And most of the free chatbots, I haven't
You're
checked
trying to
all
do it,
recently.
You're trying to do it,
I will tell you the answer. I'll let you stew on it for a minute.
Small language learning.
Most of them can't come up with it, but DeepSeek got a first try. The chatbot version of DeepSeek got that first try. Because
just sorry, put us out of our misery, will you?
Itself. It's deer. It's reed. Backwards, deer.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, it's simple when you know the answer, but that's hard to come up with. So what happens is I've asked all sorts of chatbots and I've gotten all sorts of answers. One was starfish. And when you challenge it and say, but that's not backwards, reads a plant. And then they'll just give you a different word and they cannot figure it out. But the reasoning model can challenge itself and say, oh, here's an answer that's an animal. And then I'll ask myself it backwards. Does that make a plant? No, it doesn't. And it kind of
goes through them all.
Can work it out a bit better. So it kind of helps to explain how a reasoning model is better. They're all still not great, though, by the way.
Does this float your boat now, AI?
Yeah, so your kids are going to live in a world where this is available to them for whatever, and you've got the option of being pissed off about it or trying somehow to embrace it and go, if you're going to use this for your homework, we need to have conversations about that. Like, and you need to be relatively au fait with what's happening, I think, because otherwise it's just going to completely outstrip us. I do wonder if the over-promising period is over. If that bit of, like, this is going to do everything. Because obviously this is going to sound very stupid, but, like, the practical everyday uses are things like that's going to slow down or speed up the processes that we... it's going to write a brief, you know, in 2 seconds. Your researcher will be able to do something else from a radio perspective. It's kind of... the bits where the massive amounts of money that have already been spent, how do they get that money back? That's up for grabs now, right?
Well, they lost like $500 billion in the stock markets after DeepSeek came out on Monday. So in a couple of days, $500 billion was wiped. NVIDIA lost the most, but the bubble hasn't actually burst because NVIDIA is still way up on where it was a year ago, like substantially worth a lot more than it was a year ago because it is the primary provider of the chips that are needed for AI. But it does have to have some sort of a leveling off because, like, A, they're talking about, like, everyone's going to be using this stuff and it's like, well, you don't have capacity. We don't have the energy in the world. You don't have the chips in the world. You do not. That does not exist. And if we're going to go down the route of providing that capacity, we are going to be very destructive and have a crazy climate impact for the sake of being able to generate images that have six fingers.
You're welcome back to The Hard Shoulder. Kieran Cuddihy with you until 7 o'clock, and you know what time it is. It's the last bit of the show.
Ignition sequence start.
This is the last bit of the show.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Yes, it is the last bit of the show. Ger Gilroy and Elaine Burke are both still with me. Ger, Conor McGregor, you wanted to talk about.
Well, I never really want to talk about...
Desperate to talk about Conor McGregor.
I actually want to talk about a guy called Paul Hughes, who most people probably are unfamiliar with, but he's a rising star in the world of MMA.
Yeah.
He's from Lavey in Derry. He was a good GA man as a kid and risked the wrath of the elders of the town by giving up a promising football career to become an MMA fighter. And just recently he fought Khabib Nurmagomedov's cousin. People who might be familiar with Khabib. He absolutely annihilated Conor McGregor in a fight where, which was the biggest fight at the time. In the previous 9 months when they were hyping the fight, McGregor would have called him all sorts of names, you know, his religion, his country, his father.
Was it his bus that McGregor trashed? Was
yeah,
that the build up to that?
That's that whole thing. And in the middle of the fight, when it's clear that he's going to get absolutely pummeled, that you can hear McGregor saying it was only business, and there's no let up from Khabib. He like absolutely annihilates him, and you can see Khabib's corner saying things like "break his arm," you know, punish him for what he did. And so there was there's a real sense that that is the end of McGregor as a fighter. But Paul Hughes fought his cousin at the weekend. Khabib was in the corner, and after a great fight where Paul Hughes could have won, some people thought he did, he ends up losing on decision. He says to Khabib, you know, "I'm not like the other guy, I'm my own man." And Khabib then is like, comes on the mic and thanks the people of Ireland for standing up for the people of Palestine. Nobody else in the world is doing that, and sends a message on Twitter to Paul Hughes saying, "You and your family are welcome to come over to Dagestan and train with me and train with us and see what the country is like." At which point there's like a series of tweets calling him a rat, saying, "Take off that tricolour, you're not even Irish, you know what you are," and words to such effect from Conor McGregor, which are deleted, you know, after whenever whatever wears off. Mm-hmm. And then immediately,
you know what, from up there. Immediately, is that how he put it?
There is an outpouring from the Irish MMA community going, "No, we stand with Paul Hughes." And, you know, James McLean is like, "Philly McMahon, what are you talking about?" Like, yeah. You know, okay, so you're pissed off about the fact that he doesn't hate your enemy, but some of our best patriots have come from Derry, you know. So there's just the last kind of remaining pillars of what you thought would have been the areas of support for Conor McGregor in Ireland have been eroded, it seems, apart from obviously the various bots online who are, "Yeah, you go, man, you go be president."
Yeah.
So
anyway, his future lies in the States, possibly.
Well, he's a big Trump fan,
as we know. We're going to avoid Trump. Let's talk about Zuckerberg.
Yes, because this is fun.
Okay, to wrap things up.
This is fairly new news as we're talking today, but essentially the head of Meta, Mark Zuckerberg, held what's called an all-hands meeting, so like all staff on a video call, and he was complaining about everything I say gets leaked, and the meeting got leaked. And the headlines coming out of this are hilarious, and he's really annoyed about it, and it's evolving again as well. So now he's really mad that the headlines are saying that he's giving out about leaks and that information has leaked, and now apparently they're putting out memos saying they're going to crack down on leakers in Meta. And what is happening
now... And the
memos
are getting leaked. I love it.
But what's happening now is so many reporters are now saying, "I've never had so many people from Meta contacting me, offering me leaks." So like their efforts to stamp this out is actually encouraging.
Zuckerberg's employees are basically trolling him.
It's hilarious.
All right. I like that. Elaine Burke hosted the For Tech's Sake podcast. Ger Gilroy from Off The Ball. Thank you both very much. Off The Ball is up next, actually. And I'll be back on Tuesday from 4 o'clock. So have a great bank holiday weekend.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Which Manning brother will win the FanDuel Kick of Destiny 3 on Super Bowl Sunday? Peyton or Eli? Make your free pick now to compete for a share of $10 million in bonus bets. May the best Manning win. Only on FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Vermont. No purchase necessary. $10 million prize pool to be split equally among all eligible participants who made the correct pick. Prize issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.